Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
Must be episode 6 of this Cosmos magazine, and now an entertaining article for all you people overseas. It's about our gigantic spiders which come around Australia. And the article is called Big Spiders Eating Small Vertebrates. Images collected by a team of biologists show that the Amazon rainforest is a very bad place for arachnophobes. Okay, it's the Amazon rainforest. The comforting notion that an evolutionary hierarchy more or less governs predator-prey relationships, specifically that vertebrates eat invertebrates and not the other way around, has been roundly demolished by a team of researchers armed with cameras. Quote, "This is an underappreciated source of mortality among vertebrates," says evolutionary biologist Daniel Roboski of the University of Michigan, USA. Quote, "A surprising amount of death of small vertebrates in the Amazon are likely due to arthropods such as big spiders and centipedes." For some years, Roboski and colleagues have been venturing to the lowland Amazon rainforest, looking for example of arthropods, invertebrate animals with exoskeletons, capturing, chowing down on victims with backbones. The paper published in the Journal of Amphibian and Reptile Conservation demonstrates that their mission was certainly not in vain. They report and show many instances of spiders as well as a few centipedes and in one case a giant water bug taking vertebrate prey, including frogs, tadpoles, lizards, snakes and even small opossum. Quote, "These events offer a snapshot of the many connections that shape the food web, and they provide insights into an important source of vertebrate mortality that appears to be less common outside the tropics." This is co-author Rudolf May. Here's a picture. Oh, God. A wandering spider preying on a frog. Ugh. Pretty big things. I'll tell you what, I was out in the desert cycling, and I had this spider, and it was on my leg. I was cycling, and the spider was sitting on my leg, knocked it off, and to my horror, it appeared in my helmet a bit later on. It's pretty horrible. A wandering spider preying on a Bolivian bleating frog. It's all these big nasty spiders. A wandering spider preying, well, you can imagine it'd be wandering. Okay. Are self-replicating extraterrestrial spy probes eating each other? Well, there you go. This is another feature article. A modelling suggests that von Neumann machines probably aren't a thing, a Lauren Fruge reports. If you're wondering, cannibalistic space probes are probably not the reason we haven't seen aliens yet, according to the UK researcher. In a paper published in the International Journal of Astrobiology, Daniel Duncan Falcon explored the one possible solution to the question that challenges our belief about humanity's place in the universe. Where is everyone? People stargazing on the dark night sometimes idly mull over this question. Countless exoplanets spin around the stars. So isn't it far-fetched to assume life, in particular intelligent life, must have arisen at least in some of these worlds? A fraction of these life forms should have developed advanced technology to send out interstellar spacecraft. And although travelling such vast distances across space would take a long time, the universe has been around for billions of years, so why haven't we seen any trace of aliens yet? The question is known as the Fermi paradox, named after the Italian-American physicist who approached the problem with some mathematical rigour in 1950. The paradox is strengthened when considering the possibility of exploring the galaxy itself, replicating probes, also known as von Neumann machines, after the mathematician who proposed the technology in 1960. An advanced civilization could launch a single probe with the capability to mine raw material from other planets and asteroids in order to build a replica of itself. The probe and replica would then travel onwards to different solar systems to replicate themselves again. And repeating this process, the population would grow exponentially. In a relatively short space of time, perhaps as little as 10 million years, the galaxy would be teeming with exploratory machines. And yet, in line with Fermi, we haven't spotted one mining nearby asteroids for metal or setting up a cloning workshop on the moon. Over the years, scientists have proposed a host of potential reasons to explain this. Maybe the probe is still en route, or it is purposely keeping itself hidden, or we're just not looking in the right signs. Maybe the Earth is indeed unique for hosting life, or intelligent civilizations are doomed to destroy themselves before achieving interstellar travel. Or perhaps they refrain from building self-replicating probes because of the potential risks involved. Self-replication could result in encoding errors, explained Fogan, lead author of the new study from the University of St Andrews in Scotland. These mutations will propagate from generation to generation with unforeseen unintended consequences. One potential consequence is called the predator-prey hypothesis. It involves some probes evolving into predators that cannibalize other probes as an efficient way to make copies. This would reduce the total population of probes, ensuring that humanity will not see them, says Forgan. The population dynamics of such a situation has largely been unstudied, and he set out the use of predator-prey models from mathematical biology to explore whether the hypothesis is likely to answer the Fermi paradox. Falcon used the Lorca-Volterra equations, a pair of ordered differential equations classically used to describe the interaction between two species with their predator-prey dynamics, in particular how populations fluctuate over time. He applied the equations to a hypothetical self-replicating probes across the interstellar network. In the network, each stage plays host to a predator-prey population, which transmits and receives both predator and prey from the neighbouring star systems, he explains. Typically, the solution is to the Lorca-Volterra equations oscillates, and sometimes predators outnumber prey, and sometimes vice versa. In this case, Falcon ended up with just such an oscillatory solution. Depending on your local growth mode, both the population and the flow of predators and prey between stars, there may be solutions with a relatively large number of prey probes inhabiting the Milky Way, he says. This means the predator-prey hypothesis doesn't significantly reduce the total population of probes, suggesting that there would still be heaps out there. Lorca-Volterra modelled, therefore, doesn't actually provide any convincing solutions to Fermi's question. Lucy Mitchell, a mathematician at the University of Adelaide, says that although the paper is interesting and adventurous, he's unsure whether the concepts will eventually be experimentally testable. With complex models like this one, particularly when you have lots of parameters which can be tuned, it becomes possible to produce almost any kind of behaviour, he explains. Such models will produce solutions to the Fermi paradox, non-solutions to the Fermi paradox, and almost anything in between. And to test which is one correct, we'd need to constrain those parameters or experimentally test the model's predictions. Typically, Lorca-Volterra equations take into account four factors: the growth of the rate of prey, the rate at which predators destroy the prey, the death rate of predators, and the rate at which predators' population increases by consuming prey. In a prey-predator system on Earth, mathematicians generally have pretty good ideas of the numbers from observations, but hypothetical systems of spacecraft and parameters are simply wild estimates. Unfortunately, parameters in Falcon's model are unlikely to ever be measurably experimental, Mitchell says. Short of observing some interstellar conflicts between alien craft, we probably won't be testing any predictions it might make soon either. And of course, if we did manage to collect enough data to observe a predator-prey dynamic suggesting by model, we would have solved the Fermi paradox anyway. Falcon makes a variety of other assumptions in this analysis, including the initial premise that assumes probes would mutate in the first place. Surely, a civilization advanced enough to build such technology would put safeguards in place to protect spacecraft from random errors over long timescales. But nonetheless, the paper presents an intriguing thought experiment. Negative results are an important facet of science. By ruling out potential solutions to the Fermi paradox, we step incrementally closer to the real answer. Do you? I think that's hopeful, because you could have, that's if there is a finite number of false hypotheses. The breaking of America's fossil monument. A vast, valuable fossil deposit is in danger of being lost to mining and private collectors. Museums and scientists are furious. Good on you, Trump. But it is him. My God, the United States is a pretty amazing place. Among the dramatic rock landscapes of the southwest, the United States lies a great North American fossil field, a striking area of plateaus and geological formations that offer some of the world's most interesting specimens. They're a pretty amazing place. It's no less than a paleontologist's dream come true, according to Barry Albright at the University of North Florida, who has spent 2 decades working in around the area of South Central Utah and was designated the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument, a GSENM, back in 1996 by President Bill Clinton. It's absolutely staggering, he says. The whole Mesozoic is exposed, their Triassic, Jurassic, Cretaceous. This is all the animal, the dinosaurs, but particularly Cretaceous. Basically, you've got an almost continuous sequence of rocks that represents 95 million years ago up to about 72 million years ago. So that's, you know, it gets interesting. So I think life began 500 million ago, land life 400 million years ago, or Cretaceous, so around 330, and then the dinosaurs start from 240 to 600, so that's a good slash of it. But things could take a turn for the worse. In late in 1970, current President Donald Trump ordered that protected area be slashed from the original 728,000 hectares to just 64,000. Mining and fracking companies opposed the eager moving on the newly freed up land. Tellers have already pushed off private land by the US so-called non-commercial paleontologists who sell fossils at trade shows and the highest bidder. New oil and gas extraction and mining would ruin even more resources scientists have yet to discover. The loss to science and museums and to the general public would be incalculable, Albright says. David Pauly of Indiana University and the immediate past president of the Society of Vertebrate Paleontologists is equally worried. Quote, a national monument is something that is established specifically to conserve the resources. Yes, hon?
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.